Today's shir is dedicated for Refuah Shleima, for Shalom and Bracha. Today's shir is Masechta Nedarim Daf Pei Vav. We will begin on Daf Pei Hei Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom, Hashtamis Lemegarsha. The Mishnah that we had discussed in our previous shir spoke about a case where a woman made a neder that her husband may not benefit from her. And the Tanakhama of our Mishnah learned that nether is a meaningless nether because a woman is obligated to that all of her earnings are meshubed to her husband. So it's not hers to be mefer. The Rabbi Yochanan Nuri discussed in our Mishnah that, yes, this is a nether that we need to be concerned about. And Rabbi Yochanan Nuri said that we have to be concerned about because what happens if the husband divorces his wife, and at that point, she's obviously no longer obligated to him. And since she's no longer obligated to him, the nether comes into effect. And if they're going to want to get remarried, they won't be able to get remarried because she has this prior existing nether to contend with. And the Gemara said that Shmuel says, Halach Krab Yochim Ben Nuri. The halacha follows the opinion of Yochim Ben Nuri. So the Gemara asked, how can we say that Shmuel paskins like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri? That Shmuel, we find in other places in Shas, is not concerned about a davar shelo ba'olam. And here we're referring to a situation of davar shelo ba'olam. Right now they're married. And since right now they're married, the nether that they have in place is not valid. So how can you make a nether? So the Gemara said that we're referring to a situation where she was magdish her hands. Ask the Gemara, even if she made a nether on her hands, that still wouldn't make any difference. Her hands are obligated to her husband. So the Gemara answered that the nether was meant to be in effect after they get divorced. But ask the Gemara, and that's where we begin the shir. At this point, Baruch Hashem, they're not divorced. So, ask the Gemara, how can we suggest that this type of wording of a nether that says that the nether should be effective after they get divorced, that it should be a valid nether? Amr Ila, says Rav Ila, yes, when she makes the nether in this type of wording, even though right now there is an obligation for her that everything that she earns belongs to the husband, and therefore the nether is not valid until after the marriage is over, until after they get divorced. But since she, at this point, since right now she has her hands, they can be magdish them even for after they get divorced. And he brings a raya that type of a nether would be effective. Umayilu, he says as follows, what would be the halacha if somebody sells his property to someone else? And he says, and then he intends to buy back. And he says, when he sells it, Oimer l'chaveroi, when I sell this piece of property to someone else, I say, sadazu shani meichalach, this piece of property which I am selling you, l'she'e, when I will purchase it back from you to Kaddish, it will be Hegdish. Milay Kaddish, certainly it's Hegdish. Because right now it is in his Rishus. He's making the statement while this piece of property is in his Rishus. And since he's making this piece of property when it's his Rishus, so then he has the right to be Magdish it. So even though he's speaking about a time where there will be an interval in between where it will not be under his control, he will have sold it. Still, since he right now could be Magdashit, and when he wants to be Magdashit, it will again be in his Rishus, it's a valid Hegdash. And the Rishonim point out, the Ran points out, that this halacha that Rav Ila is using as a basis for his explanation is not based on a svara or on a klal. It's not based on a Sfar on a Mishnah. It's not based on a Sfar, Mishnah on a Braisa. It's something that is now is obvious to him. And the Ran explains, what does Rabbi Eli say? He says that a woman's hands are not really the property of her husband. A woman's hands are not the property of her husband. And there's a few ways of explaining it. Rabbi Chanan explains it, that since we know Rav Huna teaches us in Masechet Ksubos Tamnu Ches Amebeis, a woman could say, "Eini nezoinus v'eini oisa, I'm not going to, don't expect support from you and don't have to turn over my earnings to you." So we see that the husband's ownership over his wife's hands is limited. Moreover, that I saw the Achronim try to explain. Yes, a husband is entitled to his wife's earnings, but a wife is not the physical property of her husband. And since the wife is not the physical property of the husband, that's why the wife has that right to be magdish her hands. To which Rav Yirmiyah asks, Maskla Rav Yirmiyah, me dummy, how are you comparing the situation that we're speaking about to the case of this case? In the case that we're speaking about the person who's selling his field but has not yet sold his field and is making a declaration what he will do when he repurchases the field, right now that field is completely his property. But a wife, even though, as we just finished explaining, a wife is not considered the property of a husband, but as much as we say that a wife is not considered the property of a husband, a wife's earnings do belong to the husband. And since a wife's earnings do belong to the husband, says the Gemara, does she have a right to be magdish, her earnings? Her earnings are belong to the husband. And the way the Ran explains, what is the machloikis of Rav Yirmiyah and Rav? What is the machloikis of Rav Yirmiyah and Rav Ami and Rav Ila? He explains Rav Ila compares a woman's ownership of her hands, even though she has to turn over those earnings that she earns to her husband, as the property that a man currently owns. Whereas Rav Yirmiyah says that since she has to turn over her earnings to her husband, so that means that she isn't the same as somebody who owns a piece of property outright. And therefore, says Rabbi Yirmiyah, we can't compare the two situations. And therefore, says Rabbi Yirmiyah, this case of the woman who's being magdish her ma'is yadayim should only be compared, somebody says to someone else, this property which I have already sold, when I repurchase it from you, tagdish, I'm going to be magdish it. There, says the Gemara Mikadosh, would it be hegdish? Of course it wouldn't be hegdish. Because right now, since I sold the property already to you, I have no connection to this property. And since I have no connection to this property, I certainly can't be magdish it. And similarly, the hands of a married woman, says Rav Yirmiyah, are not hers. Maskler Rapapa, says Rapapa, me dummy, Gabizvina, you still can't, says Rapapa, that the case of the woman and the case of the person who sold his property are really not the same. Me dummy, can you say that they're the same? Gabizvina Masika Masayu, when a person sells a piece of property, he's completely disconnected from that piece of property. Gabi Isha, but a woman, even if she's obligated to turn over her earnings to her husband, Mipsika Milsa, is she completely disconnected from that property, from her hands? As we said earlier, a woman still certainly is the owner of her hands, and no one else is the owner of those hands. Hale Dami, and therefore says Rapapa, what should our Gemara's case be compared to? El Oim L'Chaveri. Somebody says to someone else, Sodezeh Shemashkanti Loch. He put up a piece of property as collateral. And he says, L'Chashevtenim Amcha, when I will pay off the obligation and get back this property, tagdish, it should become kadosh. That miloy kotcha, because even though he indeed put up the piece of property as a mortgage, he still is the owner of that property. And since he's still the owner of the property, he certainly has rights to that property. And therefore, he says, that's why the woman is compared to this case. She's not disconnected entirely from her hands, and that's why she could be magdashit. Maskalar of Shesh Dimi, me dummy. But your comparison, says Rav Shesha Rav Dimi, is not good. Sod b'yadol aftoisai. In the hands, in the case of the property that I put up for a mortgage, all I need to do is pay off the loan. And once I pay off the loan, that piece of property will completely revert back to me. Here, it's not just paying off the loan. It's the husband that's in control. Isha b'yadol asgarish. Does the woman have control? Is the woman in control to have total control over her hands? A woman doesn't have total control over her hands. She only has total control over her hands when her husband divorces her. And right now, her husband hasn't divorced her. But of course, Taisus Masechet Ksubos points out that why isn't there a halacha that since the woman could say, Ein nezaynus v'ein ha'isa, which we learned is a prerogative of the woman. So even though she can't control getting divorced or not divorced, but she controls saying any nezaynus v'ena isa. So some explain that our Gemara is going according to the opinion of Reish Lakish, not the opinion of Rav Huna. Rav Huna is the one that says that a woman could say any nezaynus v'ena isa. Reish Lakish says that a woman does not have that obligation, that and therefore, she can't say in the Zionist Vein Aisa, and therefore she is not considered in control of her hand. But the Ran doesn't like that teretz. And one of the reasons the Ran doesn't make that teretz is because we actually paskin like Rav Huna, that a woman can't say in the Zionist Vein Aisa. So because of that and other reasons, he says that a woman, even if she says in the Zionist Vein Aisa, and she doesn't have to turn over her earnings to her husband, she still, the halacha is, still has to do whatever she has to do for her husband. Different, as we learned in Masechet Ksubos, the different, in Daf Nun Ches, the different things a wife is obligated to do for her husband, not because they're her earnings that she has to turn over to her husband, but as the obligations of what a wife must do on behalf of her husband. And therefore, she's never, even if she were to say, ain't in the Zionist Vein Aisa, her hands are not completely hers, and she doesn't have the total control because she doesn't control the case of being able to divorce. Another pshat that I saw is that even if we'll say that a woman can make a declaration of ain't in the Zionist Vein Aisa, which means that she has control of her hand, that's not a declaration which is permanent. Because a woman could ultimately change her mind. When do we say that a person can be magdish something? He can only be magdish something which he has total control of. But the Einin Nezoinus V'Einin Oysa is not a permanent status. And since Einin Nezoinus V'Einin Oysa is not a permanent status, that's why the nether would not be a valid nether when she says that my hands should be hagdish. And therefore says the Gemara, Haloi Damya, says the Gemara, Rav Shesh Bereder Idi doesn't disagree with Rav Papa. He gives a riff and reason why. I put up something for a mortgage for 10 years. That even though right now, and there it's not a case, as we've been learning till now, that he could pay off the mortgage anytime. It's a mortgage that was made that the Malva will have this property for 10 years. So still, he could say that when the 10 years are up, I can be magdashit. Says the Gemara, it's not a good comparison. I'm asking Ravashi, me dummy. Hasam kits. The 10 years will end. And when the 10 years are end, he reverts to having control over that property. Isha miyis leketzusa. There's no specific time when a marriage will end that we could put a date to it. Hopefully the marriage will never end. And therefore, how can we compare the two cases? Elam Ravashi says, Ravashi, a totally different explanation. And that, he says now, a subject that we discussed earlier in our Masechta. And that is, how does the halacha view a neder of koinim? And the halacha views the neder of koinim, shani kanamis, that kanamis are a very strong form of neder, a very strong form of hegdish, the kedushas al gufdami. That just like if we're magdish something for kedushas al guf means that I'm going to use the actual thing that I was magdish for the mizbeach. I was magdish an animal. That animal, I'm going to put on the mizbeach. That the halach is that type of hegdish doesn't have any pidyon. You can't redeem it. Certainly, as long as the animal is healthy, and moreover, the halach is that type of a hegdish is a very strong hegdish. That even in a normal case where the hegdish should not be applicable. Here, if you say this type of kedushas aguf, there it has a very strong form of hegdish that it could be effective in cases where it would normally not be effective. Where do we find this? K'rava, Amar Rava, hegdish chametz v'shichur mafkim edei shibut. If somebody put up his animal for collateral for a loan, so and as the Rishonim point out, when we speak about collateral, sometimes the type of collateral that's put up for loan is called an apoiteki. The definition of an apoiteki is apoitehei koi, that this is designated to be used to pay off this loan. And then I take this animal, which I had made an apoiteki to pay off my loan, and I use it, and then I magdish it. So one can make an argument. There's a prior obligation. There's a prior lien on this shor. The halacha is that the halacha doesn't say that. The halacha is that the hegdish will be valid and it will override the pre-existing lien. The same thing by chametz. What that means to say is that if somebody put up his chametz, even to a nochri, for collateral, and now Pesach comes, and Pesach, we know every Jew is not allowed to have a nor from the Pesach, the Jew has to get rid of that chametz. Even though there's a prior lien on that chametz that it's supposed to be used to pay off the loan, the halacha is that it doesn't have the Issa chametz overrides that, and I have to destroy that chametz, even though it's chametz that mortgaged to a loan. And as the Rishonim point out, even if it's mortgaged to a loan that is owed to a non-Jew, and a non-Jew doesn't have an issa chametz, it doesn't make a difference. Shichur, if somebody put up his eved as collateral, and then he went and he freed that eved, so the person who I put this up for, the person that I put it up for a mortgage could say, you can't free that Eved. I have a lien on that Eved. The halacha is that freeing the Eved overrides the lien. So that's the same thing here, that even though the woman is obligated, everything she earns is obligated to her husband, by her being magdish, her hands, that has the ability to override, that has the ability to override the shibud that a woman has to her husband. Ihachi, says the Gemara, if that's the reasoning for our Mishnah, that the reason is because she made it hegdish with this type of a strong hegdish, so why does it say Shema Yagrushena? Why does he have to say that the reason is because why do Rabbi Yochanan Nuri and our Mishnah have to add this whole new consideration that maybe they'll get divorced and now the nether will kick in? And when the nether kicks in, he won't be able to get married to her. We have this whole new reason. Answers the Gemara, indeed. The main reason why it's effective is because of the main reason it's not effective is because Hegdish Mafkir Midei Shibud. The Mishnah added another consideration. The other consideration is that this is Shemi Yagrishena, we're worried Shemi Yagrishena. The Tanakama, how do we explain the Tanakama of our Mishnah? The way we're going to have to explain the Kama of our Mishnah is that he does not ascribe to Konamis such power. And even though we've been learning the power of a Kedushas Aguf, that the Kedushas Aguf is Mafkir Midei Shibud, he says a woman whose Magdash Yodei L'Aseim is not that case. And as we said, the concern of Shemi Yagrishena, as we learned in our previous year, the Tanakama holds, is very unlikely. And since that's unlikely, that's not a good reason to take that into consideration. Our Gemara just spoke about Hegdish Chometz V'Shibud. Our Gemara just said, Hegdish Chometz V'Shichrur Mafkiyim B'dei Shibud. So I saw that the Shem Shmuel explains this Gemara al Pidrush. And he says, what does this Gemara mean to say? We all, unfortunately, he explains, sometimes become caught up in different situations of the Yetzirah that takes over to a degree our lives. But the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gives us sometimes in our life during the year to be able to shake off those unnecessary obligations, those improper obligations. Says the Shem Shmuel, that's what the Gemara means. Hegdish. He says Hegdish refers to Shabbos. Every Shabbos, Bo Shabbos Bo Menucha, when Shabbos comes, it's an opportunity for us to shake off all of the obligations, all of the foolishness that envelops our lives. Chometz. That's what he says is Pesach is all about. Just like Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, not only did they leave Mitzrayim where they were physically enslaved, but they were, as we know, in Mitzrayim in the Memtesh Shari Tumah. And they left Mitzrayim, they were able to shake that off from them. They were able to shake off the Ruchnius the Geshibut from them. Says the Shem Shmuel that every year as Pesach comes, what we're supposed to be doing when Pesach comes, of course, besides all the mitzvahs that come with the Yontav of Pesach, we're supposed to use it as an opportunity to mafkir the shibud, to shake off our ties to the foolishness of that we're sometimes connected to. And shichrur, we know that Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, represent the time of Yovel. That's when they blew the shofar, when it was the Yovel year. It was the time that Avodim went free. Similarly, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Aseres Yimei Tshuva represent a time in the year where we can shake off from us the shibudim that we have that aren't the correct shibudim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us times in the year to wake us up and shake away these shibudim. Says the Mishnah. Nadri Ishtai. We have here a situation where somebody's wife made a neder, the Savra, and he incorrectly thinks Shanadra Beitai. And he made the Hafara on that assumption that it was his daughter who made the neder. Or Nadra Beitai, or it was his daughter who made the neder, the Savra, and he incorrectly assumed Shanadra Ishtai. It was his wife. The way he made this mistake, the Ran says, is it was reported to him that it was his wife who made the neder, when it was really his daughter, or vice versa. The Ritva gives a different example. He says, he was standing by the doorway of his home, and he heard a woman making a neder. He thought that it was his wife. That's who he thought what that voice was, when really it was his daughter, or vice versa. And the Shita says that even in such a case, that his intention was to be made for the neder of the voice that he heard, but since he made a mistake in identifying whose voice he heard, it's not a good afara. The Ran also points out, our Mishnah, as we just discussed, is speaking about when the hafara was made a mistake. But he says that not only is the halacha that when that we're going to learn, when the afara was made a mistake, the same thing would be when a hakama was made a mistake. The Ritva says that a hafara in a mistake sometimes could be a good hafara, but a hakama never is considered a valid hakama. The Chasam Sofer asks, why doesn't our Mishnah speak also about a case where man has two wives and he got confused which wife made the nether? So Chasam Sofer says, whatever is the halacha when he gets confused between his wife and a daughter will be the halacha when he gets makes a mistake between two wives. But the Chasam Sofer says the reason the Mishnah did not choose to speak about two wives, because there's one parasha in the Torah about being made for the nedarim of a wife. There's a parasha in the Torah about being made for the nedarim of a daughter. So the Mishnah wanted to speak about the cases that are mentioned in the Torah, not get involved with cases that are not mentioned in the Torah. Nadra b'nazir. If somebody accepted upon herself to be a nazira, and therefore she won't be able to eat grape products, drink wine. The Savar, but he thought she nadra b'kabra. She didn't make herself into a nazira. She just said that she's not allowed to drink wine and eat grapes. Not that she meant to become a nazir. Nadra b'kavur, or vice versa. She made a nether that she's going to bring, that she has obligated, that these things are also to her, like a carbon is also to her, like hegdish is also to her. The sovereign, he made a mistake and thinks that she nadra b'nazra. Nadra b'tainim, she made a nether about figs. Vesava shenadim and anovim, and he thinks that it was grapes. Nadim and anovim, or she made a nether from grapes. Vesava shenadim and anovim, and he thinks that the nether was about figs. What is the reason, says the Prisha, that the Mishnah has to mention all these cases? So he says that we're learning from here that there's a difference between afara and hatara. By a Torah, we're supposed to mention the details of the nether. By a Torah, we don't have to mention the details in the nether. In all these cases, Hareza Yachsev Yefer. He should do that Torah again. And points out in the Mukhe Yosef that even though the halacha is, as we've learned so extensively, that there's a rule of Yom Shammai, here the halacha is that this is not considered the Yom Shammai. If you make a mistake in the nether, that's not considered a Yom Shammai. And only when you get the details right is it considered the Yom Shammai. Prior to that, it's not considered a Yom Shammai. So as I said, that many Rishonim are of the opinion that just like the hafara that was made on a mistake is not considered a valid hafara, so too it applies to the hakama. The Gemara, we learned many times, says the Pasuk, says Yoni Oysa. Yoni Oysa, we learn from that the husband has to know the details of the nether before he's making the nether. So says the Ran, that this Pasuk speaks about Yoni Oysa, as a Pasuk that speaks about a Fara. And that's why we can learn from there a mistake in Hafara is not considered a valid Hafara. But how do we know that a mistake in hakama is not considered hakama? So the Ran says, because the Pasuk says v'hechrish lo. Just like we learn from the Yoni Oysa that a mistake in hafara is not hafara, so too will we learn from v'hechrish lo that a mistake in hakama is not considered a valid hakama. It's interesting, points out the Ar Sameach, that the Rambam quotes this halacha, that a mistake in hafara is not a valid hafara. But the Rambam doesn't speak about the halacha of mistake in hakama. And the question asked Ar Sameach why. So the Ar Sameach says that not, certainly the Rambam agrees that a mistake in hakama is not a valid hakama. But he says that a hakama, that it's when it was made a mistake, is self-understood that it's meaningless. He says, We learned earlier in our Masechta that if a husband made an akama, he could go to Rav to be matter the akama. And the akama will be considered a hakama betas, which means to say that a mistaken akama is not valid. He says, in other words, what's the lesson that we learn from the fact that you could be matter nether and akama? The lesson that we learn from the fact that you can be matter nether and akama is that a hakama by mistake, because that's what we do. That's what we do when we matter nether, is turning what we did into a mistake, is obviously not valid. So there's no need to discuss the halacha of a mistake in hakama. But there is no such a halacha about being matter a hafara. And since there is no such halacha being matter nether and hafara, so we wouldn't automatically know that a mistaken hafara is not a hafara. That's why we need a special pasuk for the hafara, according to the Rambam, but not for the hakama, according to the Rambam. The Ran, says the Karen Oira, who did need a pasuk for hakama, because we're learning from that even if the hafara hakama, what happens when you mat the nether? When you mat the nether, you're saying that the nether that was made was a mistake. When you're making a comma hafara, it's not only when it's called a mistake, it's not only it's considered a mistake when you didn't really get the right details. When you got the wrong person, that we can't learn from the parasha of Hataras Nadarim, says the Karen Oira. We could only learn from the parasha of Hataras Nadarim. When the nether was a mistake, but not when the person was a mistake. So here we're learning that if you make a mistake about a person, then it's not considered valid. So the Drosh HaRan asks a question. We know that Yaakov Avinu fooled his father, and that's how, instead of Esav getting the bracha, Yaakov got the bracha. But he asked the Drosh HaRan, if we're learning in our Gemara, that if you don't have the right in person in mind, then the whole thing is considered a mistake. It's invalid. So why was the bracha that Yitzchak gave Yaakov something that's considered as if Yaakov got a bracha? Yaakov thought he was talking to Esav. And if you're making a mistake about the person, it's meaningless. So says the Drosh HaRan, this entire discussion that we're having here, when I think I'm speaking to you, but I'm really speaking to someone else, I have the wrong person in mind, it's meaningless, is only when a person is speaking. And a person has to know to whom he's speaking and to whom he's not speaking. But when Yitzchak was giving a bracha to Yaakov, it wasn't Yitzchak who was giving a bracha to Yaakov. He was only acting in the role of a Navi. And the Navi is not an independent individual. The Navi is the mouthpiece of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Since the Navi, he explains, the mouthpiece of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's just his mouth who are articulating the words. But it's really Hashem who's saying the bracha. And of course, Hashem knows always to whom he's speaking. That's why it wasn't considered a mistaken bracha, and the brachas indeed went to Yaakov Avinu.